future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Yes, it is Monday, October 25th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop Live. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. On Out the Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyards and across the country, or nights like tonight. We've got a little open phones. Technically, opening phones and comments. You got something to say in our YouTube chat. Want to hop on our Discord? You want to kind of join us on riverside.fm and call in? You know, it's all there. It's all there for you. Indeed, indeed. Yes, on Fridays, of course, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics in our weekly politics roundup. And check out the Wednesday show with Cyril Michalako. Cyril's a progressive columnist for the Bucks County Courier-Times and the Intelligencer. He joins me, you know, every other Wednesday or so, right, to drill down into Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and international politics. You can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just head on over to patreon.com/rcpress, or you can do like Jordy 3 did. Thank you, Jordy 3, for becoming our newest patron on Podbean. Yes, if you're a subscriber on Podbean, there's a nice little green button that you can hit up there to kind of let you become a patron of this show as well. It's always great to see the folks over there at the Podbean community chipping in and becoming part of this little community we got going here. That's where this show got its start, actually, over on Podbean, on the Podbean Live app. Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, you can help support the show by just going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. You can also help out the show by heading on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already. Smash that subscribe button, like the stream for the show, and hit that notification bell so you know every time we go live. You can also join our Discord server. Info for that is in the show notes, tonight's live stream, and, you know, on our podcast notes. For more PA progressive talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook, you know, wherever you get your live streams. Make sure you subscribe to his podcast, too, wherever you get your podcasts. That's the Rick Smith Show. Just head on over to thericksmithshow.com for all the latest across all his platforms. He's got great show out there in WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, and news seems to be breaking over there at the Rick Smith Show all the time, so definitely check out his stuff. And you also got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast if you have not already. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Yes, make sure you follow them on Twitter at The Night Caucus and subscribe to their podcast on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Yes, indeed. You a gamer? You got kids who are gamers? You got friends who are gamers? Well, you know what? Make sure you send them over to the Game Inn. That's the Game Inn with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s, latest consoles, video games for all platforms, loads of collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you got it. And kids, now that you're back to school, for every A, you get a discount. That's right. Just bring in your report card. You get a discount for A's on your report card. You got to check out the Game Inn on their Facebook page. Follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. And if you've got a question about a game, you're looking for something hard to get, shoot them a message or drop them an email at thegameinnpa@gmail.com. That's thegameinnpa@gmail.com. Special shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, as usual, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page or follow him on Twitter at @songadayman. That's @songadayman on Twitter. We've got some great shows coming up in November on Out to Coop Live, too. Next week, of course, is the launch of COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland. So next week, we're going to be talking climate. And it's been kind of not a good week on that score when it comes to U.S. climate policy. But, you know, so we might have someone on the show next week to talk about where we are with climate, where we're at climate in Pennsylvania, what have you. But one way or another, we'll be talking about climate. And then on Monday, November 8th, Kirsten Zolfo of Pennsylvania and Bucks County Indivisible will be back on the show. We talk about what's heating up here in the PA first. That's the PA-01 congressional district, where you've got some early kind of challengers out of the gate now. Against Brian Fitzpatrick, and it's also the usual craziness with school board elections coming up. Now, of course, November 8th will be a week after the election, so we'll be able to do an assessment a little bit about what happened in those school board races. We'll definitely tune in on that. And I know Monday, November 15th, we've got Laura Putnam on the show. Laura Putnam is a professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh, and she'll be on the show talking about a growing left progressive politics in the Pittsburgh area, but kind of a really interesting kind of resurgence of left politics in the Pittsburgh area. And we'll also be talking about her article, Rust Belt in Transition, what happened in Pennsylvania and the entire Rust Belt's middle suburb counties, and how and can it be reversed? It's a great piece. When that first piece came out, I was so thrilled to see it, you know, I'm totally psyched to be having her on the show to talk a little bit about this, especially in the wake of, Summer Lee just announced her candidacy, which is pretty awesome. And, we've seen, the inroads that DSA has made in the Pittsburgh area. We've seen some real resurgence of left politics out there in Western states. So I'm going to check in with Laura a little bit on that. On today's show, well, we've got another round of open phones from Bucks County to Harrisburg to Washington. The challenges we face just don't stop. So what's on your mind? What's at the top of your agenda? We're taking comments on YouTube. You can also join the show live at riverside.fm and call into the show. Information on that is in tonight's chat. You just click that little link. And you'll be taken into riverside.fm. Just make sure if you do that, make sure you kind of turn down the volume on your YouTube or just kind of mute it so you're not getting that feedback, you're not getting delay in what goes on. You'll be listening on riverside.fm. Again, information on that is in tonight's show notes. So here we are, folks. Here we are. Another week. And, it's been an incredibly busy week for me. It's Halloween is right around the corner. That means, of course, getting all the kids' costumes together and all that kind of stuff. Thinking about giving out candy and all that. But, the onset of fall coming. We've got some torrential rain coming down slated for this area tonight. From last I checked, it was like 2 to 4 inches of rain. Seems fitting ahead of a climate summit that seems like it's on the way to failure at this point. I'm not giving up yet because, whatever, our future is at stake there. Just a whole lot of stuff. It just seemed like a busy, busy week this week. I know Cyril's got a great piece coming out this week he's coming out with it. His next piece is coming out. You got to take a look at it. He and I have been back and forth on it a little bit. He's been telling me what's going on. I tell you, it's pretty crazy. And it's a bit of a weird sensation to kind of consistently be living in the county, right, that seems to be at leading the edge of crazy, in Pennsylvania. We've been talking a lot on this show about the rise of the militias, the rise of these kind of QAnon conspiracy theorists running for school boards, the anti-maskers, all this stuff just seems like, we're just living in a broken political climate right now, or social climate, really. And, I was at the grocery store yesterday in Perkasie. And, I was just thinking about, Cyril's kind of, he and I were talking a little bit about, some of that, malicious stuff as you've been seeing him kind of following on Twitter and stuff. And so I go to the grocery store later on and there it is. Nice big yellow pickup truck with a nice big 3%er sticker on it. Yep. Now 3%ers, of course, is that kind of radical right wing militia. The ones who have been, wanting to show up at the school boards and have, intimidation sessions with their elected officials. It's just like, it's got me. That's for sure. So, if you got stuff that you got on your mind, you can check it in. Love to hear from you. Love to hear what's on your mind. You can throw some ideas in the chat. You're welcome to kind of call into the show. Let me see some things you got in. I thought we could take a quick peek. I'm a little out of it tonight, I got to admit. So just so that nobody's out there thinking like, you know, whatever, I'm just really down or something like that. I'm not really super down. I'm just like really tired for some reason today. I think it's this weird change of weather. It always does it to me. It was like, you know, it was like warm and then the temperature crashed. I get excited when the temperature crashes like that because I get it gets cold and I, you know, I love that nip in the air. I grew up in upstate New York or kind of central New York and, you know, foothills of the Adirondacks and stuff. I love the cold weather. But, you know, within middle of the next day, you know, I went to bed and it was like almost like freezing. And then I wake up and it's like 55 degrees and then just got warm again today. So it's got me, it's got my head a little messed up, like allergies and things like that. But I think that one of the things that kind of got me this week was, I mean, if you tune in on last Friday, you heard me talk a little bit about it. And, you know, we had to rush that show a little bit, but it was the climate stuff, right? And it's what's happening with this infrastructure bill in Congress. And now the last I checked here, I'm just going to take a look at it again right now. And get the latest because you never know what's going to happen right now. What kind of lousy bills end up going to be passing. Yeah. Looks like they're at this point. So you remember just let's review here for a second, right? So there was a $6 trillion reconciliation bill. That was initially proposed, right? And that $6 trillion was the, you know, Biden's agenda, right? It was Biden's agenda in that one package. And so it said, okay, $6 trillion infrastructure bill. And they had a broad understanding of what infrastructure meant, right? I mean, you had, you know, fix the roads and bridges that we need to do because they've been completely ignored. You know, when bridges start collapsing, you got to start working. You got to start doing stuff about it, right? You should actually do it well before the bridges collapse. You should actually do maintenance and all this. But we don't do things like that in this country. So, but of course, you know, the quote-unquote centrist, particularly Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema over there in the Senate, were going to refuse to give to vote for that $6 trillion reconciliation bill. And so then there's all this maneuvering that took place and Kyrsten Sinema and gets with the other kind of moderates and moderate Republicans. And they decide that they're going to come up with this bipartisan agreement, right? Because remember, Joe Manchin's main disagreement with that first bill was that, you know, there's got to be Republicans on. If it's not, bipartisan, if then, you know, I'm not going to vote for it, right? There was no consideration for like what's needed and does the bill actually address what our needs are? No, just because there wasn't Republicans voting for it. So Joe Manchin was not going to do that. Right. And so then they break it up and then, you know, all the attention goes over to that bipartisan, that tiny bipartisan bill, which I like to call the, you know, it's the fossil fuel infrastructure bill. I mean, basically, that's why they were able to get Republicans on that that bill with them, because, you know, it fixes roads and bridges and everything that's necessary to maintain our fossil fuel infrastructure. And I shouldn't say not everything to maintain it. It's a minimal bill. Right. But, you know, OK, they passed that. And the agreement at the time. Right. Supposedly what was reported out is that there was a deal. Right. A backroom deal between the leaders of the Senate. And of course, Manchin and Sinema were supposedly in on this, and the leaders of the House and Nancy Pelosi was early in on this, that, okay, you want to do your bipartisan thing? Okay, that's fine. But there's a condition here. In the House, they're saying, look, we will vote for your bipartisan bill, even though it leaves out all the things that are necessary for us to address climate, for us to address our carrying infrastructure, for us to adjust our lack of funding for schools, child support, a whole bunch of stuff, right? Medical care. But we're willing to give you your little win on the condition that you vote for that, or we will vote for that, and you'll have your bipartisan win. But then in exchange, you have to vote for the reconciliation package. And they came up with a compromise bill, right, that would go into the reconciliation package, and it was a $3.5 trillion bill. Right, so not quite half with the original one. You got some money that was put in that bipartisan bill, But it was a significant compromise to get down to $3.5 trillion bills, and they were also figuring out how to address the, how to get people to agree to that deal. And so Nancy Pelosi and other leaders went to the Progressive Caucus in the House, and they basically say, okay, look, you know that bipartisan bill, that infrastructure bill? Yeah, we know. They ripped all the climate stuff out of it. They ripped all the human infrastructure bill out of it. They ripped all the caring infrastructure. All that stuff is gone. It's just about fossil fuel infrastructures, right? But that's going to be the price to pay. We vote for that. They will vote for this. And the Progressive Caucus did bang up work there by saying, okay, but we'll go along with that plan. But the reconciliation bill gets voted on first. And when that passes the Senate, we'll vote for the other one. Right? Because we know we're not idiots. Right? Thank you, Pramila Jayapal. We're not idiots. We know that if we go ahead and we vote for this reconciliation or this, bipartisan bill, all our leverage is gone. Now, they're not going to vote for it. We see what they do. So there you go. And sure enough, Nancy Pelosi tried to force the vote, tried to force progressives to kind of cave, and the progressives didn't. So on the negotiations go, and then it became the summer of Joe Manchin talking about how it's too big and the $3.5 trillion is too big. Everybody asked him, what did he want? What do you need from it? He just said, it's too big. They asked him to give us a number. What's an appropriate number? He wouldn't give a number, right? It was just the Joe show all summer long. And so in the meantime, all the momentum, like if you remember, I don't know if you remember this, right? But after that COVID bill passed, like the COVID relief bill passed, it was quite a bill, and people were charged up about it. Democrats felt emboldened, right? And say, look, you've got majorities across the board. Yes, it's a slim majority in the Senate, but you got majorities across the board, but they passed it, and there was all this momentum, and people loved it. Like approval ratings were high and all this stuff like this. And then for the love of God, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know how you combat this, right? This is the one thing that has got me down this week is that, if you lose momentum in politics, right, and you let the other side just kind of like pick at you and pick at you and slow things down, people get impatient. Especially when they start losing their benefits, especially when they're kind of threatening to be thrown out of their homes. And they look at Washington, who just, and Joe Biden administration comes in and says, we're going to do all this stuff. And then when he's pressed on, he's like, well, we got to get these Republicans on, we got to have these blah, blah. But people don't care about all that nonsense. They don't care about the rules of the Senate and all that stuff that's being absolutely critical to uphold. They care about being able to just like live. And not having to freaking struggle every single day, right? And then, of course, there's other folks that are looking at, we've been warned, like, there's the climate crisis, right? And it just gets worse by the day. I'll talk about that in just a second. It gets worse news by the day. You say, okay, good. We're finally going to step up to the plate and do something about it. What happens? You got the, Democrats go slow, they move slow, they don't move fast, they don't put any pressure on Manchin because they don't want to like upset his foo-foos, right? Because that's somehow the way that you accomplish things is that you make sure that everybody isn't kind of like upset. Everybody's comfortable. I don't know when in politics that it's ever worked, but whatever. These people seem to believe it. It works at a dinner party. I don't think it works in Congress, but whatever. They go ahead and they do that. Spend all this time worrying about Manchin's foo-foos while he contemplates, numbers on his yacht. So whatever. And so that trickles down and then it goes back and then lose more. And then, we hear this big news come out that Biden's going to go out and kind of get rid of a bunch of student debt. Whoa, look at that. The approval ratings go up. People are happy about it. They said, I can't believe it's finally going to happen. And to this day, that was out of the gate he was going to do this. And still, well, we're waiting for reports. We don't know about this. We got to see if it's going to work with the accountants and blah, blah, blah. And everybody knows. The American Prospect has been reporting on this for a couple of years now. All it needs is a stroke of his pen, and he could eliminate student debt. And he wasn't even talking about limiting at all. He was just limiting a portion of it. But that would have been something, right? If you were a college student, if you're a young person, you had student debt, boom. You've got something tangible. And then you feel like you got to win, and then you could go from there. Instead, we get mired down in this just kind of nonsense. You know, I actually had, you know, you've probably heard me say on the show now, but I had to take a break from the back and forth of everything that was going on because it was just the same thing over and over again. I mean, I used to tune into, you know, like fairly regularly. I'd listen to like the Chris Hayes show and Rachel Maddow show, MSNBC, just to kind of get a sense of where the kind of, you know, the party line in the Democratic Party was at. And like, you know, how they were kind of making their case, you know, because it's, you know, it's whatever, it's liberal corporate kind of, you know, Democratic Party power structure kind of channel. And so you kind of get a sense of how things are playing out there. And the only thing, every single night, the headlines, every single night, it was just like, it was just about updates on Trump. It is like, okay, what's the latest kind of like legal twist or turn in the cases that are going on here? And like, oh, Congress is going after people. And then they bring people on to talk about it. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go after people. And like Rachel Maddow, whatever, would be like, okay, when are you going to go after people? Like, when it's appropriate time. And like, well, when is the appropriate time? Like, as soon as we are ready to move forward. I mean, it's like this kind of nonsense. It's like just watching like wheels churn in the mud. Yeah, lots of good, strong statements and those things. But, you know, I got sick and tired of listening to them talk about what they think is happening in the legal strategy of Donald Trump's mind while there's like tangible stuff going on with infrastructure. Now, I'm not saying that shouldn't be covered. I mean, look, we're still not, nobody's had to pay for the insurrection yet. We had a freaking, like an attempt at an insurrection in our freaking country. And nobody's paid a price. Well, a couple people are now starting to pay a price. But the people who put it all together, the organizers of that coup, attempted coup, nobody's paying a price. All those, you know, AOC came out this week and said, look, anybody who's a sitting member of Congress and had something to do with the planning of that insurrection, they should be removed from office, period. They should be kicked out. 100%. Yes, thank you. AOC. That'd be something at least. You know, if I have to hear Adam Schiff talk about like, you know, oh, you know, legally there, can't believe they did this and have all this moral outrage again. If I have to hear more of that stuff without any kind of concrete action, I'm just going to be like, whatever. Turn off the channel. Good luck. And I don't know who that serves. I mean, seriously. I mean, I know people who are hurting. I know people people in my school district, right? Where we're watching the freaking, as you hear me say all the time, like militia members, right? And QAnon conspiracy theorists kind of coming in and kind of like ramping things up on our school boards, right? I mean, this should be like front and center news nationally because it's not just here in Pennsylvania or Bucks County. We just happen to be a particularly concentrated like cesspool of these people. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I watch some of these news shows sometimes. I just don't know who they're talking to. I mean, you know, I've told the story now several times. You know, so many of my students talk about their experiences under COVID. And it's like, it's like a fundamental shift. Like, I've never heard, you know, like students, just like, you know, not like the activist students. You're always going to have the activists, but not just like students talking about how, like, they're not going to put up with being mistreated at work anymore. Or they'd rather just kind of like work on stuff that they care about, even if it's not paying a whole lot, until they figure out what they want to do. I mean, it's like, and really concrete stuff too, as well. And, you know, and I look at, you know, it hits close to home. You know, I always remember that feeling, right? That feeling of like someone like, you know, telling you, yeah, okay, I know things are hard right now, but, you know, we're going to help. You know, we're going to fix it. Or we're going to take care of it, right? Or, you know, try to give you that sense of hope. And you have that hope, and you get it dashed. And you have that hope, and you get it dashed. And you have that hope, and you get it dashed. On and on and on. And it leads down a really perilous well of cynicism. But here we are with, I mean, you think about it. I mean, just go back and you think about Indivisible. Then you think about the Women's March. Then you think about Black Lives Matter. You think of the rise of DSA. Right? I mean, you think about PA Stands Up. You think about all these organizations that kind of sprang up and worked from like the ground up. And they're still organizing, right? I mean, he's like, this is where the energy is right now. And yet you've got the people in leadership who just seemed completely oblivious to what people's lives are like. And, you know, how do you take anybody seriously when they sit there and they tell you that climate change is an existential threat? And to the way of putting that in practice is to strip out the vast majority of the climate provisions in this reconciliation bill. To allow a guy who makes his cash in the coal industry to dictate climate policy. Now, it's one thing to be a realist in politics, right? Because frankly, if you put something forward and it's, you know, this guy's not going to vote for it, it's not going to pass. Right? But, you know, but your only option isn't to like pass a crappy bill and then pretend that it's not crappy, or just kind of like go, you know, cry and go home or something. Right? I mean, I think about a whole bunch of different kind of options, right? You could sit there and pass this bill if you think, okay, we need something. You pass this bill and be just scathing in your criticism of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema as you vote for this bill, and be like public about your disgust about selling our future, selling our kids' future down the river for coal and for hubris. And to let those people know that we will remember that they did this to our kids, and our kids will remember them. They will remember the Manchin name for the rest of our lives and our kids' lives and our grandkids' lives. And we will tell them the story about the man who stood in the way of protecting our world. And Manchin will be a disgusting name that rolls out of your mouth. And Kyrsten Sinema will be held up as the pretender, the self-interested, the pretender that helped her buddy Joe Manchin sell out the American people, sell out the climate, even though when she told everybody she was for climate, even though she ran originally in the Green Party, sell it all out for her own personal, individual, who the hell knows what quest that is. And we will tell our kids about Kyrsten Sinema. And those names will be remembered. And we'll never, ever forget. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you got to do. That's stuff you got to do. So we'll see. We'll see. But as of right now, you know, Reuters first reported this week, this is what the climate stuff is just really just got me, you know, I don't want to feed into the despair. And I know that I'm sounding that way tonight. I'm really sorry for that. I don't want to just do doom and gloom. I'm really trying not to. But, you know, I'm looking at this. Let me just read this. This is from the Reuters report. Came out this morning. So greenhouse gas concentrations hit a record last year and the world is, quote, way off track, unquote, in capping rising temperatures, the United Nations said on Monday in a stark illustration of the tasks facing the UN climate talks in Scotland. A report by the UN World Meteorological Organization, or the WMO, showed carbon dioxide levels surged to 413.2 parts per million in 2020, rising more than the average rate over the last decade, despite a temporary dip in emissions during the COVID-19 lockdowns. WMO Secretary General Pieteri Talas said that the current rate of increase in heat-trapping gases would result in temperature rises, quote, far in excess, unquote, of the 2015 Paris Agreement target of 1.5 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial average of the century. We are way off track, he said, and quote, we need to revisit our industrial energy and transport systems and a whole way of life, unquote, he added, calling for a dramatic increase in commitments at the COP26 conference beginning on Sunday, on Halloween. How key is that? The city of Glasgow was putting on the final touches before hosting the climate talks, which may be the world's best remaining chance to cap global warming at the 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius upper limit set out in the Paris Agreement. There it is. On the country's current pledges, global emissions would be 16% higher in 2030 than they were in 2010. According to a separate analysis by the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. I mean, like, come on, let's do the math, right? That upper limit, they're saying you have to cap emissions, right? You have to be zero carbon neutral by 2050. And then recent reports said, no, that's got to be like 2040. And why? Well, because of this. Under the current pledges, let's read that again. Under the current pledges, global emissions would be 16% higher in 2030 than they were in 2010. So that means emissions are going in the wrong direction. The wrong direction. So when we're looking at, here's another one. This is in, was it The Guardian? Oh, it was also Reuters. Where is that one from The Guardian? BBC. Here's another one. So the amount of CO2, methane, and nitrous oxide rose by more than the annual average in the last 10 years. The WMO says this will drive up temperatures in excess of the goals of the Paris Agreement. They worry about our warmer world is, in turn, boosting emissions from natural sources. The news comes as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson said that it was, quote, touch and go, unquote, whether the upcoming COP26 global climate conference will secure the agreements needed to help tackle climate change. Quote, it's going to be very, very tough this summit. I am very worried because it might go wrong and we might not get the agreement that we need. And it is touch and go. It is very, very difficult, but I think it can be done, he said on Monday. Sounds like someone who's ready to fight. My God. The restrictions imposed around the world during COVID pandemic saw an overall decline in emissions of CO2 of 5.6%. That's because everybody was staying home because of the pandemic. That's it. A natural disaster, a pandemic, right, is the only thing that kind of reduced that. Not because we wanted to, not because we made good decisions, not because we decided to actually, abide by the agreements we made. No, it's because, in our country alone, what's it? Over 700,000 people now dead? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes 700,000 people out of the game, send everybody back in their houses, but just in this country. Yeah, that'll impact the CO2. That's tragic. I mean, it's tragic and something. The interesting thing there about this is, maybe an increase in natural emissions, right? Because half the emissions that are kind of put up in the atmosphere come from human activity, right? I mean, come from burning of fossil fuels, right? And, the ability for, those natural areas to absorb all this stuff depends on the weather, or, you know, the climate. You know, so that another issue, and I'm reading now again from BBC. So another issue is that of the past decade, emissions of CO2 have increased progressively. So even though carbon output was down last year, the increase in the levels in the atmosphere was still bigger than average between 2011 and 2020. According to the WMO's annual greenhouse gas bulletin, CO2 reached 413.2 parts per million in the atmosphere. Right? This is at the current rate of increase, the greenhouse gas concentrations will see a temperature increase by the end of the century far in excess of the Paris Agreement targets of 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius. Right? You're way off track. And they go into this whole thing. Look, then about the other 40% of emissions, right? You know, from methane, for example, right? We've seen a kind of increase in methane. It comes from the activities of microbes and natural sources such as wetlands, right? So what's happening here, and they explain in this piece, right, is that as temperatures go up, right, more moisture can be held in the atmosphere, which means more rain. It becomes wetter and warmer. When things become wetter and warmer, more bacteria grow, more microbes grow. And what do they give off? They give off methane. I mean, seriously, I'm just serious what we do about this stuff. I don't know. And this comes too as well. I don't know if you saw this too as well. There's like a record-breaking bomb cyclone that is kind of shutting down highways and floods in parts of Northern California. 10 inches of rain fell in 24 hours in Northern California. Some streets are still underwater. Did you ever hear of a bomb cyclone until like the past couple of years? I didn't. Now it seems like at least a couple times a year we get to hear about a bomb cyclone. Right? I don't know what to do. But I'd love to hear from you. If you got any thoughts in your mind, you're thinking about anything tonight, you know, as you can see, I'm kind of in this lane, you know, Not a very good lane. It's true. The one thing I wanted to talk about tonight, but I frankly, to be honest with you, it's just my work has just been crazy lately. So I've got all this stuff. We'll talk about this stuff on Friday, but we had all these kind of internal documents drop around Facebook. Right, what Facebook knew about the what they knew about spreading of information, right, and the fact that there were people within Facebook who were like paying attention to this stuff, who were furious that the Facebook, you know, management would refuse to deal with what they knew was going on. Right, there was a. You know, and one of the things that like Breitbart, for example, figured strongly in this, right? They looked at let me see if this is the one that I wanted to share. No, that wasn't the one. Too bad. It looks like I could have sworn I had this one I wanted to read tonight. It was such a great story about it was a really great story about the Facebook emails that got dropped. Wait, let me take one more quick peek. Where's the DOC here? Bomb cyclones. Oh, well. but it was really wild. There was this one article, which I can't believe I didn't save it for tonight. I could have sworn I had it right here. They set up these mock accounts, right? I mean, as a way of testing what was happening about the spread of misinformation, the spread of disinformation, and the spread of kind of, you know, dangerous right-wing stuff. And they found out, like, pretty quickly that, you know, the mock accounts that were set up to say that, you know, they were Christian and they were conservative and they were Republicans and they were new to Facebook, they would start getting bombarded. Like the algorithm did this, started getting bombarded with stuff from QAnon, from Breitbart News and all the far right stuff. And then even when they would go in and then delete those articles and say you don't want to see that, they would just start getting more. They get flooded with them. And they tried to show, right? They tried to kind of like tell everybody that this is what was going on. And it was ignored. So, you know, again, Facebook's going to get what it deserves. That's for sure. One thing, I don't know if everybody saw this too. This is a good story to check out. This was from Patrick Berkery in the Keystone. It's like a tale of two pandemics, one for billionaires and one for everyone else. I don't know if everybody saw this. It's a pretty good piece. Read a little some of the headlines here from Dick Yingling to the Sixers co-owner Mike Rubin. Pennsylvania's billionaires have seen their fortunes grow during the pandemic. So with every Yingling beer you've enjoyed, I do not drink Yingling beer. They are anti-union and they're brutal to the workers. Anyways, with every Yingling beer you've enjoyed, Eagles, Phillies, and Sixers game you've attended, and Comcast service you subscribed to during the pandemic, you've helped Pennsylvania's richest get richer. How rich? In a new joint report by Americans for Tax Fairness, Healthcare for America Now, and the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, it shows that the collective wealth of Pennsylvania's 17 billionaires has more than doubled during the pandemic, from $28.4 billion to $61.4 billion. That is an increase of 116%. Using data from Forbes, the report tracked the wealth growth of Pennsylvania's billionaires from March 18, 2020 through August 17, 2021. The report shows that while Pennsylvania's were enduring pandemic-related furloughs, layoffs, and other economic and unemployment hardships, billionaires like D.G. Yingling & Son, owner and president Dick Yingling, Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie, and Comcast president Brian Roberts saw their prospective fortunes grow by hundreds of millions of dollars. Pennsylvania's pandemic unemployment rate peaked at 16.2% in April 2020, skyrocketing up from 4.8% that January. The state unemployment rate fell to 6.2% in September 2021. As of October 15th, more than 30,000 Pennsylvanians have died from deaths from COVID-19 since the start of the pandemic, all the while Pennsylvania's billionaires have been raking it in. And it goes through a list of them, right? Mary Alice Dorrance Malone, Campbell's Soup heiress, right? Oh my God, Campbell's Soup heiress, she actually lost money. How about that? It goes through all the billionaires in Pennsylvania. Thomas Hagen, chairman of the Erie Insurance Group, got a nice little 5.4% bump in wealth, going from $3.1 billion to $3.268 billion. Maggie Hardy Knox, owner of 84 Lumber and Nemacolin Woodlands Resort. Well, you know, her net worth, you know, was back in March 2020, was a, you know, a measly $1.4 billion. Poor Maggie. But August 17, 2021, went up to $2.918 billion. That is a percent change of 108.4%. That's right. More than doubled. More than doubled. Jeffrey Lurie, you know, owner of the Eagles. Poor guy only had $2.7 billion in March 18th, 2020. Year later, a little bit more than a year later, boom! Saw a 27.9% increase to $3.453 billion from 22.7. Yeah, that's right. Mars, the Mars heiress, Victoria Mars. She had a nice little $6.2 billion back in April 2020, March 2020, August 2021. $8.121 billion, a 31% increase. There you go. This is the kind of stuff I mean, like that we don't, you know, that is who gets paid. That is why this infrastructure stuff that is driving me absolutely batshit crazy. Those people are just sucking it up, all the wealth, and then blaming the rest of us. Calling the rest of us greedy, wanting handouts and all that, when they basically profited off our pain. It's sick. There's a sickness at the core here, folks. There really is. There really is. I mean, whatever. Whatever. Oh, yeah. Well, everybody's quiet tonight, so I guess I'm going to have to be quiet, too. I'm not the the happiest camper tonight, I know. I'm just tired. I'm frustrated. And it is what it is. So I was hoping to hear from some few folks to kind of take me out and some other territory. But you left me with it, so here I am. Oh, God. Oh, God. Anyway, so just remind you, everybody, that we've got some great shows coming up in November. I'm looking forward. Christopher, no problem, man. I'm just messing around. We've got some great shows coming up in November. And, you know, we've got Kirsten Zolfo coming up on November 8th. I'm really hoping that I get somebody up. We can get someone on the show for next week to talk about some of the climate things. I've got some I've reached out to a couple of folks. I'm going to be reaching out some more this week because I would like to get us some perspective, like kind of Pennsylvania rooted perspective on that. And then, of course, on November 15th, we've got Laura Putnam coming in. Do check out her article, too, as well. It's called Rust Belt in Transition, What Happened in Pennsylvania's and the entire Rust Belt's kind of middle suburbs counties. And can it be reversed? Great piece. Getting to some of the history of what happened, why it is that people gradually started walking away from the Democratic Party, and why it is that we're starting to get some of the resurgence of this. It was good that she could come on right now. She's coming on after the election, so we'll have, I think, even a better read on what's happening at the electoral races. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens going forward. And we got with the launch of Summer Lee's campaign. It seems out in the West is there's a lot of action going on out in the West, I tell you, because it's like the battle between, you know, these folks who are still, you know, primarily it's kind of like, you know, like the white guys who are still kind of, you know, gearing towards the moderate center, and they're still buying into this old school Democratic Party politics out there. But then you've got all the energy is on the left. Even, you know, in the race that Summer Lee announced for, I mean, I'm just forgetting the guy's name now. He also, launched, but he's another African-American guy, much more kind of, seems more kind of reasonable in his presentation. Reasonable is the wrong word. More kind of like, you know, your consultant ad, right? Your kind of consultant ad will come out and say, you know, if you want to show yourself to be, you know, he's a professor or something, he's in front of a desk and you say, you know, you're this guy who's going for the, but his politics, you know, he's, you know, talked about Green New Deal, talked about things that are fairly progressive. And the fact that you've got him running against Summer Lee, Summer Lee is phenomenal, right? I mean, Summer Lee is full of energy. She is, you know, she is kind of setting out the standard bearer. She is the standard bearer in my mind for a left politics in this state, about what we can do from a movement perspective. That's not to knock, you know, anybody else, not to knock Rick Kajewski or Elizabeth Fiedler or Sarah Innamorato, right? I mean, any of these folks, Nikhil Saval, I mean, you know, we go down the list, right, of amazing folks that have been elected. But Summer Lee has been really, you know, insistent on the kind of movement politics of it. And the fact that she's going to be running for Congress now, whew, is phenomenal. So I'm really looking forward to that. Thanks, Shireen. I see you. Thank you. So we've got a good stuff coming up, and it'll be fascinating to hear after the election on November 2nd, to talk to Laura Putnam, to get a read on what happened in the election and, kind of her sense of some of the history behind that and kind of where things are going from here and why. So good stuff. Good stuff. Anyways, I didn't mean to, you know, for folks in the chat, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to like drop like a guilt bomb. That was not my intention. I'm just kind of in that space, really. I know you're out there, and I appreciate it. I appreciate every time that I come on, and that there's folks out there listening and kind of joining in, and people pick up on the podcast. Totally get it. That was not my intention. I'm just kind of like a little bit out of sorts tonight, is how it is. I'm tired. kind of overworked, wish I could quit my job, you know, stuff like that. But here, the other thing that I got to put on the table once again is make sure that you vote on November 2nd. There are absolutely critical elections that are happening all across the state. You know, you've got row offices, you've got school board elections are absolutely critical. You know, and look, you've got a week at this point. If you haven't been plugged into what's happening locally around you, please, please do. Please kind of make sure that you're plugged in. For Shireen, if you're still listening right now, I had the email, Shireen sent me an email about a guy running in Berks County. If you could drop his name into the chat right now, that would be awesome, and I'll give him a plug. Let me see if I can pull up, and if not, she's still not there yet. I'm going to pull in. I know Stephen Schnell is running for school board out in the Kutztown School District. He is, again, same thing has happened in Berks County that has happened here in Bucks County, when you have these kind of these right-wing folks that are taking over, you know, taking over or trying to take over the local school boards, you know, with these conspiracy theorists. Let me pull this up real quick. I think I know where it is now. I was looking at the wrong email. Yeah, so here, let me give a shout out here to, let's see. You got John John D-E space P-L-A-N-Q-U-E. He's for Township Supervisor. You can vote for, yeah, there he is, for Maxa County Township Supervisor. Shireen just dropped it in the chat, so you can check that out there. He's a Democratic candidate. He opposes warehouses and sports, supports smart development that benefits everyone. Yes, if you're out there in the Kutztown area, you can vote in the Maxa County Township for Maxa County Township Supervisor. John DePank, DePlank, I think is how you say his name, or DePlank is how it looks. John DePlank for Maxatawny Township Supervisor. If you drive out in the Kutztown area and the Maxatawny Township, you'll notice there's plans to build these massive warehouses. There's already been warehouses taking over like all the kind of farmland kind of in that area down by Brownigsville and so on. And those gigantic warehouses keep on moving further westward toward Kutztown. Christopher also dropped in the chat, you got Kimberly, I assume, or Kimber Bowers for school board in Dallas Town. Another one to kind of look out for. So DePlank, yep, okay, it is DePlank. Shireen said, she gave me the pronunciation. Thank you, Shireen. Yes, so get out there. John DePlank, vote for him. Maxatawny Township Supervisor, says Shireen. And Christopher says, Kimber Bowers for school board in Dallas Town. Get out there. I know here in Bucks County, November 2nd, you're going to be out there voting for the Penn Ridge United candidates. We've had them on the show. You can look back at our previous shows and Out to Coop Live to check them out. We got major election happening up there in the Palisades District. Again, we've had the candidates on for the Palisades District in previous shows. Make sure you get out there. We didn't get a chance to have anyone on from the Central Bucks School District. I know that they're fighting a battle out there. And I just, you know, I will put, just in case you're listening to the show, I got a message through LinkedIn, and I'll tell you right now, everybody, I am rarely on LinkedIn. rarely. Once in a while, I'll check it, but I'm rarely over there. But I did see a message about the Quakertown school board race, and the candidates are going there. And I'll be honest, I don't know about the lay of the land in Quakertown, but if you're listening to this and you're involved with what's going on in the Quakertown, please shoot me an email. Just go ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. That's ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at RCPress and message me there. That's a nice, easy way to get in touch with me. I'd love to know what's happening at Quakertown. Like literally, I'm right down the street, and it'd be great to kind of get more involved with what's happening up in Quakertown. So please do. So that's the big message right now. Vote on November 2nd. If you've got your mail-in ballot, make sure you get that mail-in ballot to a drop box. If you're me, I think it might have been, I know like it was like today or yesterday was like last day to request a ballot, but you know, don't mail it at this point. Get to a Dropbox if you can, right? Go over and put it in a Dropbox so you know it gets there in time. Because you want to make sure that your vote is going to count in this absolutely critical election. And, you know, we'll go for there. We'll keep on fighting the fight, everybody. Anyways, I'm going to call it a night. I've got my kids upstairs. Got to make sure their homework is done. Got to get to bed early. Got to get to work early tomorrow. It seems like the days are just not long enough right now to get everything done that I need done. So here we are. Anyways, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for populating the chat. Let me know that I'm not out here alone. It always makes me feel good. And I'd like to encourage, kind of share our content with your friends, encourage them to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're at 168 subs right now on our YouTube channel. That is absolutely fantastic, given the fact that we didn't start promoting it until fairly recently. You get out there and tell people about it and have them subscribe to our YouTube channel. Even if they're not going to be watching our YouTube channel every single day, if they get out and they subscribe to that, it helps people see our content, right? It lets kind of the little algorithm kind of gnomes know that, oh, people are interested in this content, and we get put in front of more eyes, which is phenomenal. Make sure you also have them sign up to our podcast, right? You can just go to Podbean app. You can go to Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, anywhere you get your podcast, really. You just look up for Out the Coop Podcast or Raging Chicken Podcast. You're going to find it. Subscribe there. Also this week hit a big note. We passed the 30,000 downloads from our Podbean. That's our kind of where our podcast is hosted. So 30,000 downloads. And that is absolutely fantastic news. And a special shout out once again goes to Jordy3. That's all I know this person by for the handle on Podbean. But thank you for becoming a patron over on Podbean. Actually, that was kind of really cool to see this week. And remind everybody that you can help support this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. I promise you, everybody, it will not be as down next week. Just been one of those weeks and one of those days. And here I sit. So thank you all for joining me tonight. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I'm hopeful, actually, even though I don't sound like it. You're welcome, Shireen. Appreciate all the organizing you guys are doing out there. It's fantastic. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I'm out of here.